someone knows something. It's possibly even a member of this community who has information that they do not even realize is significant. That are the words, or those are the words, of the latest Guthrie family statement. It is day 51. Where in the world is Nancy Guthrie? Who took her? And are the answers already sitting within the Tucson community?
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime, with more than 50 countries represented in our community. Now, day 51 in the search for Nancy Guthrie. She is, of course, the 84-year-old mother of Today Show anchor Savannah Guthrie, who vanished from her Tucson home in the early morning hours of Sunday, February 1st. Tonight, the case appears to be entering a bit of a new phase, with a direct plea once again from the family. New questions about what happened before the crime on a couple of specific dates. Concerns about leadership of the investigation with Sheriff Chris Nanos, and a growing focus on where the suspect may have been hiding in plain sight. Here to break it all down, Lieutenant Bob Krieger, recently retired in Pima County, former SWAT commander. Next up, Kurt Dabb, retired Pima homicide detective. And last but certainly not least, you've got retired NYPD detective David Sarney. So we have an all-star panel for you today, as usual. And we've got quite a bit of sound to play for you today to help take us through this show, which we're about to do. But Bob Krieger, last time you were on, we had sort of a truncated show because we had the Corey Richens verdict, which was guilty on all five counts. Cautionary tale: do not try to poison your spouse. You will likely get caught in 2026. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do it, don't use five times the lethal dose of fentanyl. Try to go a little bit more under the radar. That's all advice that Bob Krieger gave. No, I'm just joking. He would never give me that advice. But Bob Krieger, we were talking last time about the family, and we hadn't really heard from them. In your estimation, I mean, how important is it? KVOA, the local NBC affiliate there, they did a special on Saturday night, which I believe was called Bring Nancy Home. And that's when the Guthries sort of, you know, they coincided with that special, essentially releasing this latest statement. But how important is it for them to keep themselves in the public eye?
I think for the overall investigation, it is very important. You know, at some point, we've already seen it here locally with the FBI, the attention to the investigation itself, it's slowing down some because there's just not a lot happening right now. You've seen that. Not a lot of follow-up. You know, the scene is pretty much back to normal as far as Nancy's house goes. And the cameras aren't out there. So to keep that eye on it, the national eye that they can put on it, and only them, that'll keep it in the public's eye, which will in turn keep it in the eye of the investigators. And that public eye is so important because ultimately it's probably going to be something from the public that really cracks the case. That is the piece that the investigators need. So the more they can do that, I think the better off the investigation is.
And Kurt, to you, I mean, do you agree with the Guthries that whoever has information and whatever sort of leads to either an arrest of a suspect or suspects will likely come from within the Tucson community? Because that's basically what they were suggesting, that you don't need to go to California or Utah or Mexico or anywhere else. It's very likely that whoever did this, or who, you know, people or person, that they are from within the community itself.
Yeah, I think we touched on this, you know, last week. But, you know, I would never tell a victim, you know, how they should feel or the things that they should say, unless, you know, they're interfering with the investigation, which has happened a number of times in cases that I investigated. Not saying at all by any means that's what Savannah and the rest of the family are doing. But yeah, I think it's extremely important for her to get out there and, you know, let everybody know that, hey, you know, this is not over.
By the way, neither here nor there, but sort of both here and there. This is a true story. This is my life. My dear mother, my co-host, Carm, called me, I don't know, maybe 3-4 weeks ago. And she said to me, she'll call me with very random pieces of advice that seemed to come out of left field. And she always read about it in Newsweek or Time magazine to, you know, make it more serious on her end. So she calls me and says, I just read an article about how people are stealing people's likeness. And so you have to get an attorney and you need to, you know, whatever, get your intellectual property, whatever the term is. I have no idea, but get basically dot your I's and cross your T's. She said, in this day of artificial intelligence, someone is going to steal you and pretend to be you. To which I said, whatever, whatever, whatever. Lo and behold, last night I start getting tweets that I was announcing something about the Guthries. I had my Facebook, the Surviving Survivor account hacked. And then whoever does this, I'm actually curious about this. Who has the time on their hands to do this? They hacked me and then were putting up random weird stuff, but then decided to AI me walking through an airport talking about I had information on the Guthries. That was very weird. I was watching myself report about the Guthries. Bottom line, Carm is always right. Bottom line number two, anything you see on our Facebook page is not accurate. Number three, Zuckerberg, you suck. Facebook sucks. It's gone. Facebook used to be decent. You know, it used to be decent. It's horrendous. Number one, they're listening to you, so I get ads. And number three, get a human being that I can talk to because you guys are doing nothing about it and you get hacked. There's nothing you can do. And who the hell would waste time AIing me? Craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. So just be careful if you're seeing anything on Facebook. It's really not me.
Joe, back to the second part of that question, you know, them stating that, you know, it may be somebody in the community here. That's extremely possible and extremely probable, you know, that it is somebody local. Again, we're still trying to figure out, we're all trying to figure out why. Did this? What's the motive?
Yeah.
Who benefits?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, David Sarney, is that the right question to ask? Not to pit you against Kurt Dabb, but is it who benefits to figure out where they are?
Well, it's always, you look at these type of cases, a cost benefit analysis. Like what's the benefit this person getting out of it? You know, this is the reason why we worried about these ransom notes. What was the reason behind it? We don't know yet. And I get concerned when everyone's focused on the motive as to why, as opposed we get kind of lost. What happens is, just like my geographical bias in Pima County, I'm from New York. I think everything is the way it is here, as opposed to Pima County, where it's different. So once you think one way, then everything you're going to look toward is going to go that direction. And you're going to kind of push other things by the wayside. Like, this can't be possible. This can't be possible because I'm focused on this motive. The motive is led by the evidence that you have right now. Is it possible somebody had to be local to do this? It makes more sense than anything else because, you know, that's why when you're talking about, they're looking at a January 11th time frame now. That, you know, that's something they're looking at. Was it a dry run that started this? Even if you're doing something like this, and this, you know, as professional rookie people are saying it, this abduction has been over 50 days. And that's the one thing. And there's no resolution yet. But if you start looking at everything and saying, it's got to be this. It's a burglar gone wrong. It's the Epstein files. It's this. It's UFOs. You lose the evidence that you have. That's why all those tips came in. And even though it seems slow, they're still working on the tips that they've received from maybe a week or two ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. So that's the thing. Now it's slow in the media world. But as far as the investigative world, they're still running on these tips. And it's somewhat beneficial for them to have a slowdown in these tips coming in because they can work on the tips that they've had and they could answer it out with whatever facts they have to support that.
Very well said here. And this is why I call it a global phenomenon. From the greetings from the Kingdom of Lesotho. I didn't know this myself. It is a landlocked country surrounded by South Africa. One day, the three of us will do a live show from the Kingdom of Lesotho at Thule Pool's house. I'm looking forward to it. That's right after we do the Super Bowl halftime show. All that will come together. But Bob Krieger, let me play this. This is from this KVOA special that happened over the weekend in Tucson. Again, they're the local NBC affiliate. This is the statement from the family that they read on the show. So let's take a look.
deeply grateful for the outpouring from neighbors, friends, and the people of Tucson. We are all family now. We continue to believe it is Tucsonans and the greater Southern Arizona community that hold the key to finding resolution in this case. Someone knows something. It's possible a member of this community has information that they do not even realize is significant. We hope people search their memories, especially around the key timelines of January 31st and the early morning hours of February 1st, as well as the late evening of January 11th. We desperately ask this community for renewed attention to our mom's case. Please consult camera footage, journal notes, text messages, observations, or conversations that in retrospect may hold significance. No detail is too small. It may be the key. We miss our mom with every breath, and we cannot be in peace until she is home. We cannot grieve. We can only ache and wonder. Our focus is solely on finding her and bringing her home. We want to celebrate her beautiful and courageous life, but we cannot do that until she is brought to a final place of rest. Thank you for continuing to pray without ceasing. The Guthrie family, Cameron and Christine, Annie and Tommaso, Savannah and Michael.
I mean, Bob, the toughest part about this is just the not knowing. Mm-hmm. But again, they're stressing going back, you know, basically in your memory bank. And there's a couple of dates that come up here to these dates specifically. You know, they say someone knows something, and the dates that have come up are January 11th, January 24th, January 31st, which is, you know, the early the night before, and then the early morning of February 1st. So what do you make about these four specific dates that keep sort of coming back into the mainstream press here?
Well, clearly they're working off the tips. There is something very specific about those days, specifically the 11th, 17th, the days before the abduction took place. My guess is, my hunch has been, since the initial videos came out and we started hearing that there might be other days involved, that they have some electronic evidence from those days. Timestamp metadata is in there saying, hey, let's look at these days. And most folks, you know, if nothing happens at your house, you're not going to review your video footage. So what they're doing is just asking people, there's something very specific about those dates, and they want to go back and get as much information, because I agree, somebody knows something. They might not even know it. It might be insignificant to them, but someone saw something in that neighborhood, or just a car driving weird that night. You know, why'd that car come out of the neighborhood with his lights off? And they don't even think it's important. But those are the little things that really do matter to the investigators.
Yeah. Kurt, to you, just pivoting slightly, you know, I know, obviously, you know, you worked Pima County a really long time. I assume you're probably still talking to some former colleagues who were there. Just two questions I ask you all the time. Number one, I mean, aside from the Chris Nano stuff we'll get to in a minute, what is morale like as it relates to this investigation? And what are your former colleagues in homicide, what are they doing in this investigation 51 days in?
Well, I think, you know, when you ask about morale around the investigation, for the department initially, you know, there were hundreds of investigators, hundreds of detectives, patrol deputies, you know, that were working this case. And morale for them was high because they got to do stuff other than chasing 911 calls, answering 911 calls. So now they're back to doing their normal job, you know, the rest of the detectives get to go on back doing their normal jobs. And so it's just a very small, tight group of individuals that, you know, are continuing to work this case. The Sheriff's Department sent, I think, if my understanding was, four detectives over to work with the FBI at the task force, and everybody else is back to work. So mum is pretty much the word at the department. The only ones that really know what's going on are the ones that are working for the task force and the FBI, and they keep that information extremely compartmentalized for obvious reasons. So I don't have any inside scoop. But I think the morale, regarding the investigation they treat it like any other investigation, because you truly have to. You can't show favor and work harder towards one investigation and not do the same for the other. So it's just normal everyday work that they're getting back to.
Yeah, and I get that, Kurt. But Bob, is that doable? Is it doable? Like you're a retired commander to tell your guys, hey, this is just another investigation, when you know it and they know that it's all over the headlines still 51 days in.
Yeah, yes and no. The thing with cops is they're going to do their job. I've protected presidents, kings and queens. And I gave them the exact same amount of protection that I would have a normal person. It's real easy for cops to compartmentalize that type of thing. They know it's important, and they know there's extra scrutiny on them probably, but they're probably doing the exact same job. And that's pretty safe to say. That's across the board. They know there's a bigger spotlight, but at the same time, they're doing the exact same thing. Because they, like Kurt said, they have a job to do. They know what they have to do, and they're going to do it. They're not going to change this or tweak that. They should be giving the same effort in all investigations.
Yeah. David, a few people in the chat right now are talking about, as an example, the dog. She had a dog. The dog passed away. People say that was an opportunity where the dog wouldn't be barking and going crazy. And that brings us back to the Guthrie's asking for information of people who may not even realize something is significant. I mean, have you worked cases, and I'm sure you have, where someone comes forward not even realizing what they're offering you is sort of the key to solving the puzzle? How often does that happen?
Well, we have recollection. People, think about these cases and these investigations. You will interview people. You'll talk to them on that date, day and time. And unfortunately, we then tend to focus them on that day, date, and time. But when they start looking back, and a lot of times we do second and third interviews of people, they go, "Oh, I forgot I saw this happen," or I didn't remember it then, but I remember it now. So unfortunately, biases by investigators. We look for that day, date, and time, and we're looking for what happened at that date, and we may not have thought about including these extra days. So this is a way of also jogging people's memory. Something out of the ordinary. The word suspicious is such an arbitrary term, but I think anything out of the ordinary that might have been said to you, or an action or an inaction or something that you thought was innocuous at the time, now we have extra days and dates to look at. So there's a little bit more of that. And that's where you look, and people start now looking at their calendar. What was I doing that day? And now, since everyone lives on a calendar, something was weird that day. I remember I went here and this is what I saw, or I wasn't there and this is what I did. We've had victims do it. I talked to victims numerous times about cases, about their investigation, about what they did, what they saw. Witnesses, the same thing, because that will jog a memory. We focus primarily on the days of the missing, of the abduction. But now if we expand a little further, maybe someone will be able to remember something out of the ordinary. I know about the dog issue. That could be something you look at as to, did the dog die of? Age of dog, was there any serious issues of the dog? You could look at that end. Will that tend and lead you to something else? It's possible. But again, this is the benefit of this case being a little slowed down on the media, because you could work these things and not really cause chaos within the media going, they're looking at this, looking at that. No, we're doing what we normally do. And whatever we can bring out, and that's why the days, dates, and times are the days and dates expanded, make it better for the investigators now, because now this is that. Well, if you remember that day, what were you doing that day and time? What was something that stood out for you with that day, date, and time?
Yeah, Mimosa here says sometimes the most mundane detail turns out to be extraordinary. Best wishes from Malta, global phenomenon. Rafin Roffer here. Bob, to you. This has come up before, obviously, but here it is again, that $1 million reward, which is a little over a million, not claimed, should throw up red flags. The perps are too close to Nancy to come forward, in my opinion. Is this a valid point or just hyperbole here? What do you think? I mean, it's a lot of money that no one is claiming.
I think it's hyperbole. Now, could they be close to Nancy? Absolutely. But at the exact same time, they could absolutely not be close. And My hunch would be they're probably not. But again, there's no evidence to support either of those things. I just think that number is the reward will doesn't need to raise much more to get someone to say something. I don't even think it needs to raise anything. Someone's going to come forward sooner or later. The dollar amount is kind of almost insignificant, whether they're close or whether they're not close. Plans happen. Whoever did this had a plan, is continuing with that plan. And quite honestly, maybe the plan never included money. We don't know that those types of things. There could be a lot of other motivations.
Kurt, to you, sorry, just taking a look at a note here, but again, I don't want to harp on this too much, but a few dates keep popping out here. January 11th, January 24th. Someone claims, or, you know, there's reports that a quote unquote suspect may have been seen at the home weeks earlier. That's the door Nest camera guy, this guy who people saw without a backpack. And Sheriff Nanos initially said, no, there's no way. We don't have any way of telling that it's from two different dates. And then apparently now they're saying this person may have been there on a separate date, which would indicate some sort of pre-planning, some sort of surveillance of Nancy Guthrie's home, and possibly, you know, possibly just literally watching her. How critical is it, in your opinion, that they are throwing these additional dates out there in terms of where they are with the investigation? Do they know more than they're letting on?
Well, I think investigators would be extremely naive to think that this act was committed on that night without any recon of your subject or of the property. So yeah, it's my belief 100% that they were doing recon. They were keeping their own notes and times that investigators do when they conduct surveillance. You know, it was sitting in the back of a van, tinted windows, and you're writing notes and times that things happen. You know, when does she leave? Who does she leave with? Is it by Uber? Is it by family member? So those things are extremely crucial to this case, because again, if you look at someone going to burglarize that residence, they're going to force entry into the residence. We didn't see any forced entry prior to, during the act of the guy going up to the door, and even after the crime was committed. There's no disturbances at the front door. We don't know what the back looks like. That would lead to a reconnoiter and having at least, my assumption is they have to have at least three, probably more than likely four individuals that, you know, are working this. And it makes it easier to do recons when you have more people. You're not out doing it, but you have to be able to trust those individuals. And because, again, the logistics of a crime like this are just crazy.
So you think, did I hear you right? You think there's three or four people involved potentially?
I think it totally would have to be at least three. So look, let's just say it's a kidnapping, okay? Mm-hmm. And right now we're going on the assumption that it's not a kidnapping for ransom because they didn't get any ransom. The ransom might've just been, you know, a red flag or a red herring, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. So a guy that size going into that house without forcing entry, kidnapping a near non-ambulatory 84-year-old female that weighs 150 pounds. And Bob and I discussed the dummy drag that we have to do for Pima County for Arizona post-certification. You have to drag a 160-pound dummy. You don't have to pick it up and throw it over your shoulder, because that's next to near impossible unless you know how to do a fireman's carry. And even so, 154 pounds of dead weight, that's a lot of weight. So there had to be at least two individuals, in my opinion, based on my training and experience and what I saw, there had to be at least two individuals there that evening. And then you have to keep her alive if that's, you know, what was purported originally, that, you know, they were going to try and keep her alive because of the ransom. That was the theory. So you got to have a couple of people watching her while the other individual or individuals are, you know, doing their things with the ransom notes. I just don't think that it's one individual. It had to be multiple. And I'm thinking three, minimum four at the most.
Wow. Thank you to San Fran Flower Bomb. Love you back. David Sarney, what do you think of that? I haven't heard, I don't think, Kurt say three, possibly four before today. I don't think. But what do you think? Do you think that is a possibility?
It's definitely a possibility. I brought this and I think my aunt's 90 years old. And to drag her out of anywhere is going to take some force regardless. So whatever struggle you're going to have is not going to be one person. And she's going to be screaming. She's going to be carrying on. She's going to be doing something. So if you have a second individual to help you and assist with that person being removed, you'll need it. Then you want to have maybe a driver. So I always said, I've not ever thought it was one person because the difficulty in a nighttime burglar taking a person out without being observed, without being seen at that time is difficult. Now you have to take all your material, take the mask off and start driving the car. There's not a lot of time if you're trying to get this person out to abduct somebody. You want to get them in and get out. So the best way you do it is with more than one person. So two, three people, a driver involved in this, because, you know, they've looked at video cameras and remember they had cameras of vehicles that were around that area after the time of the abduction. They looked at two styles of vehicles. So when you talk about these dates, are we correlating those dates and seeing if those cameras might have captured the same vehicles around that same time or earlier or later? This is why it's been so long. It's 10,000 hours of video they've been looking through. And that takes, and not only one person can look at it, but you have two or three because you want to get confirmation. Because again, we get that whole biasing. I see this, I see that. But someone else sees something different. And that's the one thing about these cases. It's not one person that solves them. It's not one person gets all the information and evidence. It's going to go through that panel, in a sense, the group of detectives banging their heads together, deciding what have we done, what we haven't done. We have this video. What does that show you? What do you see on it? I see this. I see that. Because I've seen that done in murder investigations that we've had in New York, that when I was with a partner of mine who looked at the video, saw something different than I saw, that other people saw. But when we followed up on it, that was a major lead in the investigation because it actually found out that the person that we were looking at as the suspect was no longer that person. It was someone else. That's why you're going to have that. And that's why you have a team of FBI agents working on their end, on the federal side of it. And you have your local investigators doing what they normally do. They're more familiar with the area than say maybe the FBI guys are. So they have more information. They could think a little, and they sometimes think outside that area of what federal agents think like.
And just to further back up my theory on more than one person, Joel, I watched a documentary this weekend on Netflix, and it was about this crazy guy that killed two women just randomly. He was 25 years old, six feet.
I was watching that last night. Yeah, not on Netflix, though. Paramount, I think.
Or Paramount, yes.
Wade Wilson.
Yeah. So you remember, he took that 130-pound-year-old girl, killed her, wrapped her up in blankets and all this stuff. And he couldn't even pick this little girl up 120 pounds dead weight, pun intended, unfortunately, out of that house. So again, she either walked out with the help of somebody, but again, there had to be more than one person there.
That dude is a sick bastard. Wade Wilson. I didn't know much about him. I'd heard of him and, I guess Kurt and I are living parallel lives because I was watching that last night. Bob, to you, the dates that we're talking about, these additional dates, someone in the comment section, I should have done this, but they did the homework for us, say that they all fall on a weekend, which is interesting. Does that mean that whoever is responsible for this might be working, you know, like a full-time job, and during the week they can't do, you know, like, how do you start to put together those puzzle pieces if they're only doing it on Friday night and Saturday night, you know, let's say, as opposed to Tuesdays or Wednesdays?
Yeah, it's very possible. They have conflicts on the other days of the week, but at the same time, if you're planning on doing something and you've got kind of a date in mind, you're going to want to see what's happening on that night specifically. That's scout rule number one. You know, if I'm doing it on a Sunday night, I'm there on Sunday nights. So I might be doing it other days, trying to figure those things out. But there are a lot of different reasons. It never had occurred to me. I saw it in the chat as well that they were all weekend nights. And there's that opens up a lot more theories. Like you said, maybe they have the full time job and they can't do it. My guess is they probably don't. Just the folks who do this aren't working 9 to 5 at Target. They've got a lot of free time. But I think we've all kind of changed our philosophy on what we think about the suspects. You know, initially it was, this is an amateur. They don't know what they're doing. Why would you rub grass on the camera? To if you're out there weeks ahead of time scouting it out, that shows, I don't want to say professionalism, but a skill that you're planning this and you're putting a lot of thought and effort into it.
Bob, by the way, I didn't realize that's a cat behind you. Please tell your cat, he or she, not to overexert itself. looks like he or she is very busy at laying on the counter like dead weight. Speaking of dead weight, what is the cat's name? We are a pet friendly show. I know everyone's going to want to know the name of that cat.
That is Lizzie, L-Z-Z-Y, named after Lizzie Hale. You know, she is another rescue and another. My COE kicked me out of the office today. She drew the straw for working in the office, so I'm in the kitchen.
You said Lizzie's name, her head raised. She got up for a second. She thought
that was her exertion for the day.
that's her workout for the day. Kurt, to you, one other thing, and then I'm gonna play. I've actually a decent amount of video that I haven't played yet. So, if it is three or four people, and, you know, we've heard about this potential Wi-Fi jammer being used, you know, there's debate about that. But at some point, I mean, are they reassessing? Because everyone we've talked, and we don't know what they're thinking on the inside, but everyone I've talked to almost across the board does not think this is a professional job. But number one, it's now 7+ weeks. They haven't been caught. It looks like they may have been surveilling ahead of time. You have to reassess whether or not they're, quote unquote, a professional group. I don't even know what that would mean exactly, you know?
Yeah, it's not like, you know, the detectives are sitting around saying, oh, you know, this is a professional group that, you know, did this and they travel all over the world. I mean, not very well, maybe. And what a professional group is, I don't know. I saw someone in the chat earlier said kidnapping wasn't the motive. I mean, that could very well possibly be. But I think it was done intentionally by a group, to cause harm to Savannah. I mean, right now that's the only, I guess, logical reason that I could come up with that, you know, nothing, the needle hasn't moved anywhere. And man, you know, I really feel for them because not having the answers, us not having the answers, the detectives not having the answers, it weighs on you. But whether or not they're professional, they're going to get caught. I firmly believe this case will come to fruition with arrests. When that occurs, I don't know, but I just have the trust and faith in the FBI and the Sheriff's Department that they'll be able to get this done.
Yeah, Bob, just back to you for a minute. I mean, day 51, just take us behind the blue curtain here. So it's day 51 and you get to work on your shift. I mean, is the thought process among the investigators, wow, this sucks. We're 51 days in and we don't know who did this? Or is the thought process different than, I mean, that's what I would probably say to myself, but these guys are trained investigators, or is it just, what do we have to do today? This is what, you know, this is what where we left off last night. Today we got to pick up here. I mean, I guess the question is, how do you keep it moving when there doesn't seem to be a lot happening?
Well, just because we don't know things are happening. You go back, there were 40,000 tips and that was 4 or 5 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. When you just start thinking about those numbers, I have never worked an actual task force like this. It's just not very common because these types of crimes don't happen. But when you're throwing four detectives from the Sheriff's Department, along with, I don't know the number of FBI resources at this, there is not going to be any lack of work. There is so much to monitor videos, to continue to knock on doors, to make phone calls, to, you know, collect data, all of those things, to talk to local agencies, to start working out geographically to other agencies to see if these types of things have happened. There's not going to be a lack of work. So I don't think anyone's, you know, no one's woe is me, you know, I don't have anything to do. The fact that there is a task force means there is an abundance of work. That is not going to slow down, my guess would be, for months for them to have something to do. So that's going to keep them motivated. And every little tip is like, all right, maybe this is the one, because they're all just like us. they want to be the person who solves it. You know, we've all got pride. It's that competition. Yeah. It's how we all live.
Yeah. I mean, and are these investigators, for the most part, are they sitting in an office, you know, at the Pima County Sheriff's Department? Or are they, like, when you're working a case like this, is the mindset that you like reporters, like they, you know, a news director will always say there's no news happening in the newsroom. Get out there. Like, do you want to be out in the community, like talking to people, seeing what's going on? Or are you sitting at your desk doing work, going through these, you know, these various tips that come in?
It's both. You can't sit there and work tips for weeks on end. You know, I'll liken it to a SWAT call. When I was a commander and I wasn't up at the house, at some point when things calmed down, I had to walk up there and look at it. I had to see it. I had to feel it. You know, I had to leave the CP, go see what was going on. And investigators are exactly the same way. They might be working something for a few days and like, all right, I need to change it up. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to go knock on some doors. I'm going to follow up this lead that's seen, you know, it was from a psychic, but you know what? I'm going to look into it anyway. And both David and Kurt can follow up on that because that's what they did. They did that a lot more than I did. And it's there's always something more to do. And everybody has their own kind of routine and what they like to do and how they like to follow up on these things.
From Christian Legault here, I've been asking the question, Dave Sarney, about satellite imagery. This does come up every once in a while. Can it be used? No one has answered the question, so that's going to end right now because David Sarney is going to answer the question. But first, look at this. I need to add this to the repertoire here. Best guests and best pets. How about that? Go ahead, David Sarney.
Yeah. Now, when you talk satellite imagery, you're going to have how far of the distance does the camera, the satellite hit that area at that time? You know, these are things. We had the Cessna plane wasn't even flying at the time of the missing because it was an issue between the sheriff and the pilot. Whatever, that's another problem that we don't deal with. That's a supervisory issue and things like that. Can it be helpful to an extent? But we also know that no one knew about the roof until the roof was actually photographed and a neighbor said, by the way, that roof is very different than my roof. And find out there was a camera located on that roof that apparently didn't capture anything of any vibe of any probative evidence that we know about. Satellite imagery, yes. Could you? I talk about GPS, the utilization of looking at GPS services and seeing anyone utilize GPS services from that location away, or creating a route from where they were to Nancy's home. I've looked. You know, those are things you've looked at. When we talk about past incidents, we talk about VICAP, the violent criminal apprehension program, seeing if anything fits the description of this type of abduction. They've done a lot of these things. Another thing maybe you looked at is maybe they put an alert out for the prescription medication that Nancy was taking and notified all the pharmacies. If you had anyone purchasing this within a particular time frame, notify us, because that might be something of viable probative evidence there, because I don't know the prescription medication she takes. But if you're going to try to keep her alive and know she takes it, because somewhere along the line there had to be either communication or no communication, you know she takes medication, maybe that's what they went to look for also. So all these things have been utilized. They're looking at them. Just because the media has not been notified of it doesn't necessarily mean they haven't used it. It's probably been asked and answered on their end. And we're looking at, as a group here, is seeing, trying to inform people about cases like this, that they aren't solved in a short amount of time. It does take time. And there are hundreds and thousands of missing persons like this. And this is a case that everyone gets worried about. How come this person gets more attention than the other? They all get the same attention. The thing is, the resource availability sometimes is limited because of the size of the department, the amount of federal resource available to that missing directly. So you can't necessarily say they haven't done it. They probably have. We're just not aware of it, or it hasn't been probative enough to follow up on.
I promise I'm getting to the video. Go ahead, Kurt.
I want to jump in on that satellite thing. This sounds like, you know, a question that you're asked at a detective board. Like, you've ran out of all other options. So you're sitting, you know, trying to think outside the box, right? And it just made me think right now. I'm like, holy shit. Who would I contact, you know, regarding satellite stuff? What type of search warrant? Is it going to take a normal search warrant? You know, is this stuff protected, you know, like a FISA warrant, you know, the federal intelligence, you know, services warrants and stuff like that? So, I mean, heck, now is the time to think outside the box. So I'm hoping some of these detectives are watching this, because
Yeah.
You never know. You never, never know. Whether, now look, I've asked for things from the CIA before, and, you know, they just, it's plausible deniability. You know, we can either confirm nor deny. So I doubt that they'd get it, but it's a hell of an option to try. The worst they're going to say is no.
Dab, on a lighter note, people want to know why you're a Pima County retired homicide detective wearing a Go Blue Michigan hat when both teams are in the March Madness tournament. What is the answer?
Yeah, well, I'm originally from Michigan, and we've been out here in Tucson for almost 30 years, so I'm a huge U of A fan. But, man, this I told my kids, stay away from downtown, no matter if the U of A wins or loses, because it's just going to be bad. But I don't know. I had the U of A hat on yesterday while they played, so I just threw on the Michigan one today.
And Bob Krieger is a Purdue Boilermaker. He seems pretty look at him, quietly confident that they're going to win this thing. Are you confident, Bob Krieger?
I am more confident in this team than I have been in the last few years. They're just rock solid. Matt Painter was there when I was there. He was playing when I was there. So we've got history, and it's just let's do it. Might as well get our first championship this year.
Krieger, you weren't on the team. You're not going to tell me that you were like all-star point guard for Purdue back in the day, are you?
No, I would have loved to have said. My claim to fame on that team was I played against Glenn Robinson growing up, and the big dog was there my last 2 years. So he slammed over me like in seventh grade, and I'm like, wow. I rocked our intramural team pretty well, though. So,
we got to get to this video, but there's a question. David Sarney from Ashley Mystery here. Why would the perp, if this is true that we're seeing the perp on two separate days, why in the same exact outfit? That's an interesting question, and thank you to Vesper Martini, who helps us out not only as a mod, but behind the scenes. Without her, we are nothing. So thank you, Vesper Martini. But why wear the same outfit, David Sarney?
Well, I say this because it's only a still you have. Have we absolutely been confirmed that it's the same outfit or something similar? And that's why, you know, when we
it looks similar.
Yeah, I would say similar. And that's why one thing I teach in college, I teach my students, I'm like, you know, details important. The devil's in the details. We can't say exactly the same because there's nothing to determine that they're the same. It's very similar in appearance, very similar to the person that you see, but we don't know. And there's nothing to determine, yes, that is the same person or not. So, I don't want to put and say that's the same person. We don't know, because we don't even know who the person was who tried to cover up the camera. So if we're going to say that's the same person, then you're creating an issue, because if we look at as possibility of more than one person involved, and it seems to be the case here, then we're going to say that's person A, person B. We don't know who they are. We can't say they're one and the same person or different. Similar clothing, yes. Similar approach to the residence appears so, but you only have a still. We have not, the media has not received a full video of that, nor a date and time of that video when it was taken.
For those who do not know, this is the slogan for the University of Arizona, bear down. And then someone has bear as in the Cal Bears. But so you've got some contradictory cheering going on here. But it is March Madness. Without further ado, I don't think I need to underscore this, that retired Lieutenant Bob Krieger and Kurt Dabb have not been overly complimentary about Sheriff Chris Nanos. This was on the show this past weekend that KVOA did. They did a whole special at the NBC affiliate. Be nice if my friend Matt Brode, the chief meteorologist, would have given me the heads up. But he probably doesn't even know that this aired. So that's a whole other story. But this is a piece of that interview. Let's watch it together, and then we'll break it down.
County Sheriff Chris Nanos has given many interviews on the case, but this interview is a bit different. He takes us back to what he remembers about that day when she went missing, shares what's happened since, and has a message for the person or people who took her.
It started with a call.
Take me back to the night of Sunday, January 31st. When did you get the call that Nancy was missing?
My team had notified me of a missing person. Search and Rescue was searching the area.
And we begin tonight with breaking news. The Pima County Sheriff's Department is looking for a missing woman tonight. Good
evening. And there were some concerns with what they were seeing at the scene.
And Skyline is where we are.
Investigators confirmed the missing woman was Nancy Guthrie, the mother of Savannah Guthrie, a name recognized across the country and deeply rooted in the Tucson community.
I don't even know that I knew it was the Guthrie family until probably closer to 6, 7 o'clock that evening.
Ms. Guthrie is the mother of Today Show anchor Savannah Guthrie.
Within hours, the investigation was expanding with the eyes of the nation watching. The
FBI was plugged in that Sunday. Monday morning, we got a quick briefing. They had processed the scene, and we knew we needed some help.
After the public appeal,
we do, in fact, have a crime scene. That we do, in fact, have a crime.
This area right outside of Nancy Guthrie's house. Came press conferences, drawing hundreds of reporters.
We are aware of a ransom letter that was sent to the local media.
A tip hotline was created.
I thank all of you for the prayers for our beloved mom.
Billboards went up in several states, but the decision to clear the crime scene, followed by renewed searches in the weeks after, has drawn criticism.
A major focus, all of a sudden, on the house again.
Though Sheriff Chris Nanos says he stands by the work of his investigators.
Sheriff, looking back at this past month in the investigation, did it go the way you wanted it to go?
Yes, absolutely. Here's the thing. I think somebody said, well, Sheriff, did you regret this? Look, I have no regrets about my team and their efforts. I don't regret we let the crime scene go too soon or any of that. That's just silly.
It's new FBI recovery.
Then 10 days later, the biggest break in the case, doorbell video released showing a suspect
with what appears to be a gun at Nancy Guthrie's home the night of her disappearance.
Today, it remains one of the key pieces of evidence investigators are still leaning on. But it's not the only evidence detectives are analyzing.
Cell phone data, pings, cameras. I mean, how much are you guys leaning into that information, that evidence?
You know, it could be a cell tower dump, could be analyzing a cell phone.
So there is still digital evidence that you guys are waiting on to
analyzing all the time, yes.
The sheriff says investigators have gathered a lot of information. They're just not able to share much of it publicly right now.
If you could talk directly to the person who took Nancy, what is your message?
Give her up. Let her go. Just let her go. Just take her to a clinic, a hospital. Drop her off. Just let her go.
Just let her go. Lieutenant Bob Krieger, I mean, it's kind of like a trip down memory lane. What stood out to you about this piece?
Just rehashing the issues that popped up early. I've been critical of the sheriff, but there are certain things that I'm not going to blame him for because it's just not fair. Mm-hmm. You trust your investigators. You trust your folks to when it's time to let go of a scene. He is infamous for micromanaging, so it surprises me that he would say, I trust my people to do all of this stuff. But you also do trust your folks. So there are things now to say, I don't regret anything. It's another statement that he'll probably end up regretting because there are probably a lot of things that we all have seen that if we had taken a little bit more time and not did it so quickly, it's okay to regret things. Like, wow, I made a mistake there. It's okay to admit to mistakes. You just try and fix those. You don't double down and say, I don't regret anything. We know in this case, there mistakes were made and you can't stand in front of the country and the world and say, I don't regret doing anything on this, anything that we did, because, well, that's, again, a miscalculation on his part.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt, just to add on to that, the reporter asked, hey, did this go the way you wanted it to? And he says, absolutely. And then without even being asked, you know, from a psychological perspective, he says, I have no regrets about letting the crime scene releasing it too soon. So that's obviously on his mind because he just brings it up without even being asked about that. But there's no way that this could be going completely the way he wanted to. Why not give a more authentic answer? Like, no, I mean, I prefer that we have, you know, that we solved the case by now, but we didn't.
He's got a massive ego and he doesn't want to admit, you know, anything was done incorrectly. And then at, you know, at the end where, you know, he's, what would you say to the kidnappers, you know, please drop her off at, you know, a clinic. I would have been on there like, we are going to fucking find you. You are going to be caught. So give her up. We're not stopping until you're caught. That's what I would have liked to have seen from the sheriff, minus the F-bomb.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, show some, you know, assertive power that we're coming for you. And try to, you know, at the very least fake him out a little bit, but hopefully that is what's going to happen anyway. But David Sarney, the COE, said, check your texts. there's multiple reporting going on kind of as we speak. I saw a little right before we went on air, but apparently there were some quote unquote mysterious yellow signs put up, I guess, around Nancy Guthrie's home, featuring names, a license plate number, some odd references. And apparently authorities came by and picked that up. You know, police came by to see what this is about and I guess took that in. I don't know if it's evidence per se, but they were getting calls. Hey, someone put these signs up with license plate numbers and information. You should come check it out. And they did, and they took it. What do you make of that on day 51 here?
Is there anything at this point you want to take? You know, this is tip number 10,475, 76, 77, 78. You're going to follow up on it. You know, these are things that detectives do, investigators do. You know, are they going to be viable? They'll be determined by the totality or by the facts that they get from these. You know, are these place, all this information viable? Next thing you do is then you know, when you talk about these cards, you know, are they probative? Did someone put those cards there and maybe left their fingerprints there and you fume the items that are there? There's a lot of things you're going to do on this case. That's the one thing when you have a high profile case, you're going to have a lot of people involved, a lot of people bringing out tips and information. And as this case has gone longer and longer, you will see some. This might be something that could be the break in the case. This could be that one, or it could be just part of the tips that we have already. I say this as a detective when it comes to crime scenes. You never let a crime scene go unless you feel you are confident enough to let it go. And that's the one thing. So my always has been like, if I don't feel comfortable letting it go, I'm not going to let it go. But if you don't have the authority to say yes or no to that, then that's something else. But this is just another thing you're going to look at as investigators. It's not, the cases are not ever done until you have an apprehension of the person that did it and the case goes to trial and there is a conviction or an acquittal, whatever it's going to be. Detectives work to develop probable cause to make arrests on cases like this. And that's why any tip or any lead that could be utilized to get to us to that level, they're going to work on to find out. And as I said, anytime we get a question, we've got to answer out with something. And this will be one of those questions that we hope to get it answered out somehow.
Yeah. By the way, let me know what you think about this showtime, 2 p.m. Eastern. I kind of like it. Let me know. We do 7 o'clock Eastern, Monday through Thursday, but maybe during slower weeks, we'll do a few afternoon shows. You can email us survivingsurvivor@gmail.com. I always like to get the input of STS Nation. Now, here's another. This is now a little sound, an interview with a neighbor of Nancy Guthrie's talking about how she saw something a little unusual, so she said something. Let's watch this, and then I've got some questions for the guys on the flip side.
Not that many rentals around here, but there is a rental nearby, and whoever lived there had moved out within a few days of this happening. They had moved out a few days before because the car was cars were gone. So I just became, you know, see something, say something. So I thought it's probably nothing, but I'm just gonna
right.
I'm gonna call. I'm going to talk to them and just let them know.
Obviously, that is Brian Enten, not KVOA, but Brian Enten Investigates, who has an awesome YouTube channel. So, Bob, apparently there's this vacant home near Nancy Guthrie's property. This woman and some others reported some suspicious activity. Obviously, a vacant home could be used as a staging area or an observation point. What do you make of what she is telling Brian Enten here? And you know where this house is that she's talking about?
Well, I know that there are several rentals in the neighborhood because I actually was at one a few times that some other media folks were actually renting to be their staging location. So there's quite a few of them in there. And there's a couple that are under construction. So there's a couple different possibilities. But to go back to the initial question, this is great for her. This is what investigators need. Most people might not pay attention to that, but wow, these people just moved out. Now it might be their lease ended at the end of the month. It might have been a short-term rental. There could be a lot of reasons why they left, but that's what needs to be looked into. That should be a pretty easy-ish paper trail to start tracking down, but now the investigators have something a little bit more to go on. And great for the neighbors to be aware of what's going on in their neighborhood. You know, hey, Nancy disappeared and I haven't seen that car here for 4 or 5 days. that's kind of odd if it was had been there every day beforehand. A lot of different reasons, but that's what the investigators need.
Yeah. Kurt, do you happen to know the house they're talking about, like geographically where it's located in relation to Nancy's home?
I do not. No,
you don't. Yeah, I don't either. But one of the things that we didn't get a lot of time to talk about on the last show because of that Corey Richens verdict were apparently they pulled additional images from the camera, but they're not video images. They're like still thumbnail images. And apparently from the night of the abduction, they say that they got nothing and they describe that as odd. Kurt Dabb, what is that all about? What's happening there?
Well, I'm assuming that it's either the images are either too sensitive to show, meaning that, you know, there's good information on there and that they want to keep that close to the vest, or it's simply, you know, not showing anything. It sucks for us, right? Because all we can do is guess. I wish, you know, that they would come out and, you know, I've done this in cases before, and you let out little pieces of evidence that, you know, can get things moving, or maybe, you know, send out some fake evidence, you know, say, well, we've got this, when you really don't, just to try to get some movement. But again, they really don't know who the suspects are. So maybe they're holding that stuff, you know, close until, you know, such an appropriate time. Mm.
Bob, there is a question from Lee in Tennessee. Your thoughts on Sheriff Nanos's local radio interview? Did he do? I don't know if he. I'm not aware of this interview, but is he doing a lot of local press now?
No, not a lot. Over the weekend, I think it was actually on Friday afternoon, he did a podcast locally. I'm not aware. I'm not sure how much you are aware of kind of the last week's issues that have again arisen with him. That have become more apparent because of the investigation. But there's some questions about his resume, some questions about his integrity. Quite honestly, he lied in a deposition 4 months ago about his previous work history in El Paso and suspensions and things like that. So it's just another black eye on the department because of him. I've listened to most of that interview. It's out there. I think it's the Buckmaster show, but, you know, he does his wordsmithing and try and covers his tracks, but, the community is kind of fed up with it to the point that an official recall has actually started on the sheriff's part. Other folks in the community outside of the sheriff's department pushed the effort, and the signature drive has begun for an actual recall of him in his position. So it's all of that being said, you talk about frustration. Folks, investigators, cops, from the newest street cop to the most experienced investigator, they want leadership. They want people to look at us as an agency, as a community, and say, these folks are squared away. And that's where the problems are lying, I think, in this investigation. It's not what the guys and gals are doing. It's the appearance, and that wears on them. When they keep seeing the sheriff go on TV and contradict his own statements and make statements and leave things out and call things clerical errors, you know, and at the same time, you're bending over backwards. You're going days with, you know, 2 or 3 hours of sleep. That's where the frustration sets in. And you might even hear it in my voice, even being gone, because this isn't new. This has been going on for years, but it's now being brought to the forefront, and the nation, the world is now seeing it. So there's a lot. That's where the problems, in my opinion, really lie with the investigation. You know, you want to have just a well-oiled machine from the top on down that conversations can be had. Investigators can organically investigate their leads, not be told, you need to do this, you need to get this search warrant. Well, boss, I don't know if I should do that right now. I don't think I have enough. You'll do it because I told you so. That's not conducive for results. You might want those results, but you've got to let investigations work. And this is just a lot of ancillary things that are going on that are absolutely unnecessary for the investigators on the ground. And it's frustrating for the community. It's frustrating for the citizens of Pima County. I know it's frustrating for the men and women who are working it, because I hear it every day still. And there's just so much more going on that is kind of being brought to light now.
And Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, but on a previous show here, you said that there was a 98% vote of no confidence with, from within the department. Is that right?
That was from a few years ago. So I'll update you for today. The same union that did that vote represents approximately 300 and some odd detectives that are deputies throughout the agency. The vast majority. Today, the same union released another vote of no confidence. This time it was, I'll give me a few seconds to break this down because it'll make
sure. Sense. Yeah, yeah, please take your time.
It is no confidence slash please resign. It is I have confidence in you, please stay, or I will abstain from the vote. Those were the three options. It was unanimous. I'll look it up before it's over, but approximately 215 voted no confidence resign. That's nearly half of the deputies, and that's only in one union. So there are other unions out there. Mm. There were zero votes of confidence. Please stick around and continue doing your job. And there were approximately 45 votes of I'm abstaining from this for whatever reason they abstained from the vote. And I think we could all understand probably why they did that. Mm. But think about this. 100% of the people who voted either stay and work or leave said, we no longer have confidence in you. Imagine being the manager of any corporation, of any business, and every single one of your employees didn't want you doing that job anymore. At some point, you have to have the self-awareness to look around, and instead of constantly blaming everyone else for the problems, blaming the previous sheriff for the jail falling apart, blaming an angry sergeant, and he's leading the charge for all of these pitchforks against me. At some point, when it is unanimous, and Joel, you know stats don't lie, there's probably a handful of people who would say, yes, I want him around, but it ain't going to change that much. Universally within the sheriff's department, no one has confidence that he can do the job anymore. You talk about coming to work every day and trying to do your best to solve a case like this under those circumstances, it's a factor that doesn't need to be part of the equation.
Yeah. Kurt, your reaction to, I'm sure you have heard this prior to being on the show right now, but your reaction to the fact that basically no one has confidence in the 45 who basically abstain might be afraid that their votes might be seen. So what do you make of the fact that basically no one has confidence in this guy?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. The ones that abstained, you know, did it out of fear and of retribution. And unfortunately, that sucks. I'll get back to this real quick. I did see someone put something in about, you know, a house being rented next door. So at the same time, Nancy Guthrie, the kidnapping occurred. There was the Tucson Gem Show occurring. Same time frame. And the Tucson Gem Show is the world's largest gem show. So you get people literally from all over the world come here for, I think, 3 or 4 weeks to sell their wares, to trade. Hotel prices skyrocket. Airbnbs are all sold out and rental properties as well. So, I mean, just think of that. Could it? We've had cases, Bob knows, you know, we've had home invasions during Gem Show where, you know, dudes would break in and steal all the jewelry and take off. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities that someone that was here under the guise of being here for the Gem Show rented a property and did this. So look, yeah, now you just opened up a whole new chapter.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, the stuff with, you know, Sheriff Nanos goes, it's not really about what, you know, he did to me or what he did to Bob or Aaron or any of the other cops that worked for him. What it is about is the perception of how Bob and I are. You know, we're great cops. We're fantastic cops. And I'm not saying that to boost our egos. It's just the fact that we were. And the level of police work that we're seeing now is way subpar. So he has taken a once extremely proud agency that worked some really, really crazy cases. We worked the Gabby Giffords case. I was on the task force for that case. Solved it really, really quickly.
But it's what he's done to our department and what he's done to the place that I loved, that Bob loved, and that so many of our former coworkers loved. We loved that agency despite the leadership. So I just wish he would pack it in, like Bob said, you know, take a step aside, check your ego and be like, yeah, you know, maybe it's best that I move on. He doesn't need to work. He only gets paid $100,000 a year. Cops that are working there, detectives, you know, made a bunch of money, you know, overtime working this case, you know, probably are going to make more than he made a year. So he doesn't need the job. I don't know why he's sticking around, but it would be nice if he would just step aside.
Yeah, David Sarney, I mean, you've got no skin in the game, but you're, you know, you teach to the new generation, and I know it's in your blood. What's your reaction to hearing that no one's got confidence in this guy and he's running the department and running this investigation, essentially?
I know Dave's still got friends in NYPD. Yeah, what's the NYPD think of the sheriff's department's rep?
We have seen people like that on this job, and they're horrible. I understand when leadership is supposed to run interference for their people. They're supposed to take the heat and not create interference. You know, I've seen so many bosses want to get involved. They want to be detectives, never were. So then they put themselves in, interject, and they say things that just makes bad decisions. It just puts us in a different direction than we need to go to satisfy an ego as opposed to satisfying the case. I know I had an issue with the captain about a caper, and I was like saying, Cap, we could do it two ways. We want it done, or you want it done right. You want it done, this is what's going to happen. We're not getting any arrests. This is just going to fall apart. Or you let me run it the way it's going to work, and we'll get something out of it. And we did. You know, you have to sometimes let your people be who they are. You're a guidance. You know, there's a great thing. You know, it's so funny because I have a course, and I have Sheriff Nanos talk about the difference between a sheepdog and a guardian of policing, and he's more of the guardian side. But you know what? People need leaders to be, you know, shepherds. You're going to take your people and guide them, and they will make the decisions as opposed to you making them, because you're the person who's going to be taking the flack at the pressers. You're not supposed to do that. But it seems like, and, you know, watching this, he makes the department not look good. It looks like no one knows what they're doing because of what he says. It's not because of what's happening behind the scenes, because detectives aren't going to tell you what's behind the scenes because they have a job to do. He's supposed to run the interference and say, this is what we're doing. And he should have been the one. And I believe Ron is absolutely right about this. He should have been saying, we're going to get you guys. We're going to find you and we're going to get you. You're going to be convicted. And that's how we're going to work this case. He doesn't. He kind of flatters around a little bit. Well, you know, we want drop off. That's not what we want in a leader. We want a leader to stand up for their people, to be one to sit there and go take the slings and arrows, but do it to the benefit of the people you work with. Leadership, and you know, I've never been a detective. I've been a detective. I'm a cop plus. I've never been a boss, never wanted to be a boss. But bosses, and I've worked with great ones. You know, education set aside, my best boss had a GED, but he knew how to run an office. And that's what it comes down to. How you lead is by example, and you be the shepherd, you guide. Let them do their job. He's, from what we're hearing and what we're seeing is, he didn't do that. I'm looking at that and just him saying those things. Well, I trust my people, but it doesn't sound like you trust your people. You said this about the crime scene. You didn't say it. There's a lot of issues, but I think leaders have to be the ones who've got to be the run the interference, not create it.
Well said. From 007 investigates with pity. There's two questions that are similar. Bob, the PD, FBI, did they get a search warrant? Do we know on this rented house that we keep talking about? Also, it was mentioned that Nanos was suspended 8 times in El Paso. Is that true?
That is true. I'll answer the first question first. I don't know if they got a search warrant for that house. My gut would say probably not. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it's not easy to get search warrants. You need probable cause. Just because someone left doesn't mean we can just go ransack the house. Now, they can get in there through consent and other means, but I don't know the answer on that. I do know that a house adjacent to Nancy that was being rented by a news network. Like I said, I was there. That might be what she was talking about as well. So there's a lot of things that could have gone in there, but it was right there. Going to the second question, yes, he was suspended 8 times in less than 4 years for excessive force, for gambling, for sounds like an unintentional discharge, insubordination, you name it. And then ironically, when I talked about a clerical error on his resume that was posted online a few weeks ago for the sheriff's department, those years in El Paso were not discussed. Only his first couple of years were talked about, but 2 years of his time in El Paso were missing. And that was left off of the resume. It's since been changed because it was just a clerical error. But yeah, that has been very eye-opening for the men and women of the department. And I want to give you, because I want to be very accurate because facts do matter. I looked at the breakdown of that vote and there were zero votes for confidence in please continue. There were 241 votes for no confidence and resign. And there were 65 that abstained. So then that's the accurate number there, because that just shows you where the agency is and just kind of how fed up the men and women are. And really the El Paso stuff is really, I think, opened up that floodgate to how can we continue this?
And those are like pretty sobering numbers, but I assume that the voting is anonymous, right, Bob? But some people are still reluctant.
Yes, it is. They basically do like a Survey Monkey type through the unions. But there is, the culture is people are still afraid that he is going to find out and that will limit their career opportunities. I'm going to be very vague here, an employee who brought every one of his family members or their family members to the recall post yesterday. And he refused to sign, even though he wanted to, because he was in fear for his future with the department. That is the reality of what the Pima County Sheriff's Department is. And this was a 15-year employee. This was not someone who is brand new, like, oh, I got a long career. This is someone who should, in law enforcement, be able to stand up to tyrants. That's what we do. We stand up for right and wrong. And there are folks who are so afraid, they'll just say, well, I'll just sit back because I have to pay my mortgage. And I don't blame them, but I do blame them, because at some point there has to be a hill. And integrity is a hill, and the reputation of your agency and you individually is a hill that is worth dying on. And if that means you get shuttered to the jail to work for the last part of your career, so be it. I will take that every day of the week to say, you know, my choices are for the right reasons.
Wow. Rachel here, there's two super chats. Please tell me someone found the man with the family seeing the house. Sketchy. Also, the theory of the mask under the knit one. Could they have redone the images? Some people think that he was wearing a mask underneath. Why do the recon? David Sarney, why do the recon then show up without a camera solution? I'm not convinced it's the same guy or just a dry run. 11th was moonless. It could have gotten spooked on that night. But if they did do a dry run, does it appear to you that they were, you know, unprepared? Maybe that's why people are saying they're not professional.
Well, we don't even know. All you have is that still photo. We don't know if that person ever approached the camera. That's why you got to think of a defense attorney sometimes, and you got to think of like the similarities. You know, why this, why that? We're trying to answer that out. Is it the same? That's why, if it's the same person, why didn't they do that? So was it someone else that did the walk up? We don't know, because the video you have is very limited. The distance of the person without the backpack is farther away than the person with the backpack. So you have less to identify them with. So are we saying that's one and the same, or is it different? It would be unusual for the fact that people in similar attire would go to that location at two different times without having an idea of what they were going to do when they got into that location. We're saying target in the sense, because it doesn't appear that any other residence was looked upon the night that Nancy was abducted. So that you could call it the targeted aspect to it. And that's why I kind of like the education information. I don't want to make this that's the same person. Why didn't do this? We don't even know if it's the same person. Right. They didn't have the same backpack. They didn't have this. It looks similar. It's not absolutely the same, because we don't know it's the same. We don't even know. We have a general description of a person who tried to cover up that camera. That's what it comes down to. And the question was, why didn't they cover? If they knew, why didn't they cover it up? They didn't go into their backpack to pull something out to cover it. They didn't take it off immediately. They tried to cover it. So those are questions we have to think of. Was it a surprise to them? There was an actual camera. I know I have a Ring camera. It does show at night, but you know, we don't know how close that person got the first time. to know that the camera was operational or there was a camera there or there was a reflection. We can't read into their minds, but we're going based on the evidence that you have. And that's the reason why we can't say that's one and the same person.
Look at this. Can these guys come back next week again? They'll be lucky if they don't come back this week. I'll probably beg them to come back. It's only Monday. Here's one more clip and then we'll get final thoughts. Got to be mindful of these guys' time. But this clip here is important. The COE found this. Nancy Guthrie, you know, we all know her. Most people know her as the daughter of Savannah Guthrie. But in Tucson, she sits on some boards. People know her for completely different reasons. She works actively with the University of Arizona. So this gives you kind of a different perspective about her influence in Tucson outside of being the daughter of Savannah Guthrie.
I always think about Nancy as this quiet leader who was so effective without ever working at it. That's just the way she is.
Former professor Jacqueline Sharkey worked with Nancy for decades.
She always has had superb communication skills, and she used those to help lead a couple of very important public health and education initiatives that we worked on together.
One project the two worked on, saving the Poison Information Center at the U of A, the place on the chopping block due to budget cuts. Sharkey says Guthrie got right to work.
Gathered more than 20,000 signatures that were delivered to the governor, and the Poison Center was saved.
That impact is something Dave Coulier says he's also experienced. He worked with Nancy on the School of Journalism's Advisory Council.
A huge champion of journalism and the University of Arizona. She was looking out for everybody, all the graduates of the program, and frankly, of the whole university.
He says Guthrie put passion into every project she touched.
There are a lot of people who want to get involved for resume builders or certain ego trips and that sort of thing, but not Nancy. She had a quiet power. I mean, she wasn't the loud, talkative person in the room. She was the thoughtful person who provided input when it was needed.
Now, as the tribute to Guthrie grows outside her home, Sharkey says she is not surprised.
It's all a sign of how much Nancy means to us and the enormous impact she had on the community and on our lives.
An impact, she says, everyone from her Catalina Foothills neighborhood to the U of A and beyond can all learn from.
She's a role model for how to live a life filled with meaning.
Oh, that's powerful. I mean, David Sarney, for those who do not know, he's a retired NYPD detective, a best guest on this show, all around great guy. I mean, it's interesting to see that perspective because, you know, the media nationally just portrays her as sort of this soft-spoken, quiet mother of Savannah Guthrie. But in Tucson, she's a real leader. She helped save the Poison Control Center. She worked at the journalism school. I don't know if that created any enemies potentially, but I mean, from an investigative standpoint, what do you do with this knowing that she was active, very active in the community, working on different initiatives, particularly with the University of Arizona?
Well, that's why you do a victimology, and a victimology is sort of a breakdown of what this person has been doing. You try to break down their daily routine. That's what you're doing on this case. She's involved in a lot of things, and that's something that we're not aware of. And I keep saying this, you know, Savannah Guthrie, everyone knows her in the media and people who are a certain age. The people who may have abducted her may not even know who she is in that level, because that we've been sticking on this thing that's high media profile. It's media profile because of what the media knows about her. We don't know if the perpetrators knew anything about her. But when it comes to her position in society, what she does in a routine, what's her regular her routine? That's why you talk to the family. You talk to the daughter. You talk to the son-in-law. What does she do on a regular basis? You talk to people that she knows, her friends. Were there any meetings that she set up at that day? Were there any issues or conflicts that she had with anyone within whatever she was doing, within that field of work she was doing? Was there anyone that stood out to you as unusual or treatment toward her being unusual? That's why, as these investigators probably tirelessly did a breakdown of her routine on a regular basis, her daily routine. And that's the, you know, when it comes to older people, they have a routine. They do the same thing the same way every time. And you never forget it. And that's what they do. So that's part of it. It's great to see that she was not just you know, everyone just thinks the mother and she just sat there and waited to go to church on Sundays. You know, there's more about her. And that's one thing that I guarantee the investigators are at least have at least looked at during this process.
Thank you to David Sarney. Kurt Dabb, a retired Pima County homicide detective. Someone in the chat said Kurt and Bob look way too young to be retired, which I agree with. So they want to know if you're going to get busy and help solve this case. But they're retired, at least from Pima County. Who knows? Maybe they'll go rogue. You just don't know. But Kurt Dabb, I mean, do you think that this ultimately gets solved with DNA? Did you realize the extent separately that Nancy had in the community, and your final thoughts?
I didn't know the extent that she portrayed in the community or that she played in the community. Not at all. I didn't even know Nancy of Nancy. I just learned last year that Savannah was from Tucson. Not being a Tucson native, you know, that's, I guess, not out of the realm. Back to what Bob was talking about, Sheriff Nanos, you know, and some of the discipline issues that he had. It's like I served as a cop for a little over 20 years. I was a probation officer for 19 months before that. I never got suspended without pay. My discipline, I have one letter of reprimand. You know, I learned early on from an old cop that in order to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. So you're going to have some discipline issues when you're working because you're under an enormous amount of stress, you know, 24/7, even when you're not working. So mistakes are going to be made. But good Lord, two suspensions, 20 some odd disciplines in 4 or 5 years. It's ridiculous. Good cops don't do that. Good cops break eggs because we got to make omelets. But good cops don't get suspended without pay multiple times. I'll just leave it at that.
Well said. Go Blue. Bear down. Go Boilermakers.
Go Blue. Bear down. Go Sparty. And go and boiler up because the Big Ten is in the house.
I grew up 2 minutes from Rutgers. The last time they were in a Final Four was 1976, which I realize is 50 years ago with Jam and James Bailey. And it ain't going to happen this year, that's for sure. But Krieger, it might be your year. So maybe I'll root for the Boilermakers since Bob's just a nice, soft-spoken guy that can kill you in a fraction of a second. Maybe I'll root for his team. But retired lieutenant and commander of SWAT, the SWAT team, Bob Krieger. Is a question now no longer, you know, that Nancy Guthrie disappeared, but kind of who was watching her maybe before the night when she disappeared, and whether or not these people have been sitting in this community the whole time. Do you think the question needs to shift a little bit? And your final thoughts here, Bob?
I don't necessarily think the question needs to shift too much. Like the detectives have said, they've been looking into all that stuff. It takes a lot to be that precise as a bad guy. What does my gut say? It says one thing. The reality might be something different. You know, were they out scouting this for different reasons? You know, hearing that piece about Nancy, you know, I think the vast majority of people thought this was all about Savannah, and that shows you how wrong that might be. This might be someone from the poison control center from 20 years ago. People hold on to grudges and things, and there's so many motives for all of this stuff. What I do know is that the investigators are going to keep following up on it all, whether they staged in a rented house, whether they were there weeks before, or whether this all happened on one night. None of those things would surprise me if they were all included in the investigation or if none of them were even related to the investigation. That's just how these things work out. Most of that information is just for folks like us to talk about and kind of theorize what might be. And you can work in what mights, and then it's our job, their jobs to find the facts to that stuff. And some of those things are going to be facts, and we're going to find out eventually that a lot of the stuff we talked about had absolutely nothing to do with the investigation. But it doesn't mean it's not going to be followed up on, and those investigators, those men and women, are going to keep kicking ass doing all that, and until they're absolutely have run out of possible leads.
Yeah, well, there might not be any confidence in Sheriff Chris Nanos, but I know STS has confidence in the men and women of Pima County. They're going to solve this case. I didn't think it was going to take 51 days. I don't think anyone did. But trust me, I lived there for 5 years, so I'm saying this with a little bit of experience. They're amazing law enforcement. They were then. I think they are now. And they will solve this case. How much time does that take is anybody's guess, but they will solve the case for sure. It's a beautiful community, an amazing tight-knit community. So kudos to law enforcement for continuing to work hard on it. We'll be back this week. If anything breaks on a serious note, I will ask these guys back. They are an A-team panel for this story. Appreciate David Sarney, retired NYPD. Kurt Dabb, looking like a homicide detective with the tinted glasses from the Upper Peninsula. And he says that word flag in a funny way because that's how those guys talk up there. And then Bob Krieger, Purdue Boilermaker, former commander of the SWAT team in Tucson, Arizona. Bring Nancy home. Love you, America. Love you, New York. Love you, Tucson. Bring Nancy home. We'll see you guys tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Who knows? Maybe I'll do some more 2 p.m. shows.